Mr. Henderson, Reel 10. We were talking about your commanding officer.
Colonel Morton Barrett. He was a marvellous chap. Because we didn't know him, we thought he was snobbish and all this. But afterwards, as we got older, we've heard what he did. We have a great respect for him. Because of ill health, he didn't go with us over to Normandy. The second in command, Major Harrop, was made up to Lieutenant Colonel, and he took over the regiment just before D-Day. He took ill, Colonel Morton Barrett took ill, and he couldn't go. He eventually went to the War Office and did very good work at the War Office, in the planning department at the War Office. Colonel Morton Barrett went over with us on, not Colonel Morton Barrett, Colonel by this time, Dickie Harrop. Dickie was a chap well liked. His wife, Mrs. Harrop, organised the civilian ladies, the wives and etc., in the knitting circle for comforts for us, and if any of the mothers or families had any questions, or if they got in touch with Mrs. Harrop, she would put them at ease. A marvellous family. He went over with us on the 6th of June, and he was killed on the 16th. He went forward in a jeep with a Newcastle chap, Geordie. He went forward with his jeep, and he was caught in a machine gun ambush, and he was just almost cut in half. And he's buried in cemetery La Delivrande in Normandy, which we visited last year.
What training were you becoming? Were you taking pre D-Day?
Well, we were training in Suffolk, and I remember one scheme. I was with Mr. with Carmichael, MacMichael. Did I say Carmichael? MacMichael. And Carmichael was the water friend of mine, Mr. MacMichael, lieutenant, and another young officer who was in a recce tank called Mr. Hardy, Crash Hardy, another young lieutenants, and we were training with the Norfolk with the Norfolks, and we were on one side in some, it was a forest with moorland in between and trees. There was an open ground of moorland. And we came out of the trees to advance onto the other trees, and it was like a battle area, and the Norfolks came out of the trees and started shooting at us, and it was to let us feel the sounds of rifle fire hitting the tanks. That was the first time we'd been shot at, and he said, "There's nothing to worry about. You, they're both more frightened of you than you are of them." And I remember sleeping that night in a. It was very, very hot, and we had a big tarpaulin, and we all got in round the edge of it to cover us, and the mosquitoes. It, Norfolk, it was very wet, marshy ground, and the mosquitoes had come out, and we, even though we had the mosquito treatment, the stinking ointment, one of the chaps got so badly bitten that his mouth and his eyes were all misshapen in the morning. But that was the type of we were training with the infantry. As infantry support, which we were. This was the 3rd Infantry Division we went in with. They were our infantry. The Norfolks, the Suffolks, there was the Black Buttons, the
Rifle Brigade.
But we went with so many different infantry. We went from the 3rd Infantry Division, then when they came out for a rest, we were put in with the 43rd Infantry Division. And then we'd go with the Americans 2 or 3 times. We had to go with those. Whatever we needed, we had to go. We're an independent armoured brigade.
This is, you're talking when you got into Normandy. Mm.
But this is why we were training with the infantry. Infantry support, that was our main role.
What was the role itself? What were you doing in relationship to what the infantry were doing?
Well, we were sort of backing them up. They couldn't really... They couldn't do anything against tanks, so we knocked the tanks out, they knocked the infantry out, and this is how we went, and we worked sort of hand in glove. we would support. When we went into a village, we would probably go in first to capture the village, but we needed the infantry to sort of go in the houses and get them out and hold the village. We could capture a village, but we could never hold it without ground troops, and they were also our protection as well against these German infantry with bazookas and things like that, which were one man could put a tank out, which was very expensive. So you had to be together. We were good for the infantry, and they were also good for us.
We had something like a mobile mobile artillery support for you.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. C squadron, one troop of C squadron tanks, had to go up to Pegasus Bridge to relieve the commando, the airborne. Now also, landing with us on D-Day was Lord Lovat. He came in behind us I think it was the 4th Commandos. They came in behind us, and their first objective was to relieve the airborne at Pegasus Bridge, what was later called Pegasus Bridge, Bridge over the Orne. So they went straight for there. One of our troops, one C Squadron troop, had to go there to relieve. Now, there was only two tanks from the troop left. After they left the beach, there wasn't the five. As on paper, he said they would take that, and then those five tanks would go. Well, three of them had been knocked out by mines or whatever, so there was only two tanks. But they went up to relieve the airborne, and to support the commandos. And if tanks are there, well, of course you have to have tanks. You can't find tanks really with infantry.
So your role was, when you actually got moving, it was a roving commission kind of thing, where you were sent here, there and wherever?
We were sent everywhere.
But can we stick to the training that you were getting in the place you were in the Norfolk area?
Yes. We were doing the waterproofing, then they would do schemes with the infantry. And mostly it was learning about your tanks, learning about and scheme with your radios and your guns, and then we'd do the scheme with the infantry.
Did you make a relationship with the infantry, or did you barely see them?
Oh yes, yes. We got on very well with the infantry. I mean, when we're out in the scheme, you were more or less together, you know. Oh, we were all one really. They said they wouldn't like to have been in the tanks, and they said, "You're welcome to that lot, you know, bloody coffins, you know." And we said, "Well, at least we're warm and dry, well, comparatively, where they were soaking wet. If it was a wet night, you know, at least we could get some shelter from the weather, which they couldn't."
Did your training start in a small
Wickham Market?
It was in a small way that your training started, gradually building up and
exactly.
Extending into bigger units.
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, the vehicles that we had, the soft vehicles, were only sort of old. I think those vehicles must have been used since Dunkirk. They probably wouldn't be at Dunkirk, but they were old vehicles, all the soft vehicles. The lorries and the carriers were all, we didn't know that we were all going to get new ones, that all those would be replaced. We had our Shermans, they came to Wickham Market by rail, and we went to collect them on flat trucks and drove them back to this parkland from the station, which was about 2 miles away. One officer, he was a tech officer, had insisted on driving the tank. He wanted to drive a Sherman, and the driver, which was Mr. Gok, a trooper Gok, he had no say in the matter. He had to say, "All right then, you know." Well, the officer hit a lorry and took the side of the lorry out in this village of Wickham Market, narrow street, and blamed the driver for doing it. And Mr. Gok said, "Well, I'm sorry, I wasn't driving the vehicle. You know, it was I forget his name. So the officer got into trouble. He should not have been driving. That wasn't his job. But we brought them back from the railhead, from the little station to in dribs and drabs to were fully operational with our new tanks. Marvellous.
Very exciting.
They were very exciting days. They were happy days, really, when you look back.
And the larger manoeuvres that you... Could you recall any of those major manoeuvres, major...
I don't think we did any... I remember going to one place. It was another similar place to where we were. And Montgomery was there. It was a demonstration. There was Major Horrocks was there. He was the general... A General Horrocks, and he was in charge of the Funnies, and General Hobart. They were here. They had all the funny things. They had the DDs, which we hadn't seen yet. They had other things like the big Catherine wheel, which didn't work, and they had the flare thing, the bridging thing that was opened out on top of a turret, and other tanks ran across the top. They ran into a ditch and the other tanks ran across. And another one that laid down things of brushwood. The Lothian and Scottish... The Lothians, East Lothians tank regiment had those. One of the border regiments had those things. They were called the Funnies, and they were all part of the 79th Armoured Division, and the Funnies. All these were demonstrated... They were all showing off the paces, the different regiments, different tank cavalry regiments were showing off their various things that they'd been training on. But our DDs were to come. They were very, very secret, as you can imagine. And we were the only regiment that... The 4th, 7th Dragoon Guards should have gone in with them, but owing to being caught in a sudden squall in the channel, they lost a lot of their tanks. And they hadn't time to get them replaced. It was too near D-Day. They were caught in a sudden storm, and the LTCs were sunk. Quite a lot of lives were lost. I think, if I remember, there were six landing craft sunk in the channel that day. I believe at that time there was a lot of Americans killed as well at another place further down in the channel. So we were actually the only regiment that used them. The American Rangers should have used them on one of their beaches, but they said the sea was too rough, and they never used them. But we were very, very fortunate. We only lost three tanks on the run-in.
Did you, amongst your training, manoeuvres and so forth, did you practice... going on board vessels, being taken out to sea and coming back in again?
Well,
landing practice?
For weeks and weeks with planted nothing else. Loading with cigarette ends. The cigarette end in the dark for watching the cigarette for somebody guiding us on with a cigarette end. You weren't allowed to use light and things like that. And then coming back off again and going out to sea. This was down in the channel. We were stationed then with the with the Navy in Gosport over Christmas 1943, from about October till January. We were with the Navy, and a marvellous Christmas time we had. They really looked after us very, very well, and the tanks were all in a little bay that was cordoned off with high scaffolding filled in by sort of cloth, sandbag material, all curtained off. No one could see in there, and we couldn't get in there without a pass on our jackets, and it was guarded by the blue caps, the military police with the blue security police with the blue hats on, not the red caps. And we went out into the sea onto the
landing craft
and got off, then came back in again, And we did that all for about 2 months. And we had to practice with the tides. Whatever time the tides were right, that's what time we had to board the landing craft and come off.
These were LCTs, were they?
Landing
craft tanks?
Yes. Five tanks to a landing craft. And just behind the tanks, there was the door, and two and one, and then there was a little, cookhouse, mutton stew. It didn't seem to cook anything but mutton stew in buckets, and then there was the ladder that went up to the bridge where the officer was, and there were flat-bottomed things, and they weren't very big, and when they went up. They went up, and when they came down, they left your stomach sitting up on the top. And everyone was sick. Everyone was sick. And we were on those landing craft for 2 days before we landed, and in rough weather. You know, with Southampton water, and then it was either on or off. We didn't know what was happening. We just stuck there being sick. And then they started to move. No one told us anything. And then they started to move towards the channel. Very, very exciting. But we were very pleased to get off those landing craft.
We'll come across to the actual landing itself. Going back to this Norfolk place that you were in, and the training, there must have been lots of troops in the area. Did you get involved with Americans or other units?
We were involved very much with the Canadians. They were a marvellous crowd. They were French Canadians, and we didn't know that they were going to be on our right flank. But they were marvellous chaps, and we used to meet in Guildford and Horsham. This was when we were down. This was after we'd left Wicker Market. This was just before we landed.
Can we leave that and stick to Wickham Market just for the time being?
But Wickham Market, we used to meet the Americans down in
How did you get on with
Ipswich?
Them?
Not very well at all. I don't think we ever spoke to any of them. We just sort of thought they were queer looking things. You know, we didn't have any truck with them whatever. I think one reason was we were on about 21 shillings a week, and they were on about £22,000 a week by the look of them, and of course the little girls were all swarming round them, and nobody would look at us. I think that was the main reason. I think that was purely the main reason.
Did it cause problems in the pubs or whatever you met
them?
Oh
yeah, very much so. Not particularly there. I don't think we went in the pubs very much. Not as young soldiers. We weren't heavy drinkers. The pitches, we went in to go to the pitches. And also there was a, when I'm talking about this, there was a large house in Ipswich, and it was either a Red Shield club or a YMCA or something. It was a big house where you could sit and lounge about and read magazines. It was a home from home, and you got cups of tea. And in the evening, I think it closed about 9:30 or so, and there was always a little bit of a prayer at night before it closed, and then a final cup of tea and a couple of biscuits. And these were all over the country at that time, and the people in there were so nice. There were young people, all volunteers. When I first joined up at Carlisle, there was a place like that. It was a wooden hut where you went up some steps into it, and you had to have if you wanted a cup of tea and a biscuit or a sandwich, you had to have this little prayer. And then you got your cup of tea and that. But we always seemed to go there before we came back. It wasn't very far from our billet, from where we were stationed. It wasn't far from the castle.
Where were you stationed at Wickham Market? What was your accommodation?
Wickham Market was, as I said, it was in Rendlesham Hall grounds. And I believe just recently someone had been to look at the site. I'd been myself just after the war. The huts had gone, but the concrete standings were still there, and I walked in one end where the door had been, and I walked down, and I was almost in tears, because when I came back up again, looking at the beds and knowing how many had been killed, I was on the lorries, and I got in the lorries, I was almost in tears. You don't realise how many you've lost until you go in a hut and count the empty beds. But someone had been down and had been caught by someone, a groundsman or a gardener or the gamekeeper or whatever, and he'd said, well, I was stationed here during the war, and I just came to sort of look. So they took him to the big house, and the lady of the manor, the lady that owns it, had said how pleased she was that someone had come back, and would they tell anyone in the regiment that was stationed there, please come back and make themselves known to that lady. She would welcome them very much. That's very nice.
And the accommodation, usual, typical army huts as you'd been used to.
Well, it was different in a sense that there were no more double tier bunks. They were single beds, single iron beds, and there was about, I don't know, 24 maybe to a room. There was the little pot-bellied stove in the middle, the usual, which was I never saw one lit, no matter how cold, because it took too much to clean, and that was the accommodation.
Were there many duties for you outside of your tank training and tank driving?
Guards. There was a guard about every third night. You were on guard. Guards were, because of the equipment that we had and the openness of the camp, there was anyone could have got in. So you needed a lot of guards on the tank part, the tank road where all the tanks were. You had to have quite a few guards there. And you also had to have what they called a flying picket, which was sentries walking about in pairs to see that no one was in the camp. So you were talking about 70 men on guard every night, which was quite a lot. And of course, everybody didn't do guards. There was a lot of people excused guards, like corporals and sergeants and officers and office staff and things. They didn't do guards. So it meant that we were on every third or fourth night you were on guard.
And you've mentioned basically your leisure activities being cinema
and the YMCA or whatever it was. I think it was a YMCA. It was like a big house, and we went there. We used to go into the. We had a good living. I remember one night at Wickham Market, we got back to the lorry park too late to catch the lorry. It had gone, and so we had to start thumbing it back to Wickham Market, which was about 15 mile, and we were picked up by a little vehicle from the regiment, a little car, and I heard the driver saying to the chap that was in the front, where was he from and so forth, and I recognised the dialect is from here, and I said, where are you from, sir? He said, I'm from a little place called Startforth. That's on the other side of the river from Barnard Castle. Where are you from? I said, I'm from Barnard Castle. And he had a blacksmith's shop before the war, well, in the 30s. And he joined the cavalry from that blacksmith's shop in India. He joined the regiment in India. So I still see his brother, saw his brother this morning, in fact. But Mr. Spencer, he was a sergeant major. He's been dead for a long, long time. He left the regiment and finally went into the Chelsea pensioners' home and died there, you know.
How did the people of the area receive you?
Not very well at Wickham Market, but I think you've got even people, civilian people that have moved there, are classed as foreigners. I think you've got to live there 30 or 40 years before people start saying good morning. But Like everywhere else, we didn't ever go into the village. I don't think. I don't think we ever went out into the village. Such we didn't. Some might have done into the village pubs, but the people didn't seem to. From what the others have said, the people didn't make us very welcome. They may have done if they'd known what we were going to do, but then again, they didn't.
Did you receive any important visitors at all whilst you were there?
We always had the brigadier, was always seen with his hat on, his shirt sleeves rolled right up, very smartly, always immaculately folded, with his swagger stick, and the officers running behind. He was a big chap with big long legs, and everyone had to run to keep up.
Who was it? What was his name?
Brigadier Prior Palmer. He was the father of Lucinda Prior Palmer, the Olympic horse rider, and now called Lucinda Green, I believe. And we also had a general. I can't remember the general's name, but we had a visit from a general. And of course, everything had to be, even all the stones had to be painted white. It was fantastic.
No Montgomery or Eisenhower did they arrive?
No, not then. But we did, after we left there, we did get a visit from Montgomery when we were stationed up in Fort George in Scotland. And we also got a visit from King George the Fifth, King George the Sixth, and the Queen Mother, who was the Queen then, when we were just about 3 weeks before we sailed for Normandy. They paid us a visit. I think they must have been visiting a lot of the troops at that particular time.
Did they impress you?
Oh, very much. The present Queen was there, and also the Princess Margaret Rose was also there. She would be about 16 or 17, I think, the Queen then. 16 or 17, and the other one would be a little bit younger. But they came along and, very, very nice. I was rather worried because it was a very sandy place we were at, and our boots had all been dubbined, and we weren't the usual spick and span polished up. Our vehicles were in very, very good condition, but we weren't sparkling like a cavalry regiment should have been. And when you walked about with dubbin boots, the sand used to stick to the dubbin. And they said, "Don't worry about it. You know, we weren't there to be inspected. We were there to. They wanted to meet us, and that's what they did. So it was all right. Everything was."
How did Montgomery get to you?
Very, very much impressed me a lot because. He pulled up with this vehicle and I stood in the back of it, and we were all in lines, and we'd been standing there quite a long time. I'm talking over an hour. We'd been standing in line waiting for him to come, and when he pulled in to Fort George, he just waved us, "Gather round." So we all gathered right round him, and he gave us a pep talk and said how much we were going to win, and this, that and the other, and impressed us very much. It gave us a lot of confidence. I don't think we needed a lot, but he gave us a bit. We were always very confident.
And you never saw Eisenhower? He didn't?
Never saw him, no. But we saw Montgomery. In fact, I saw him again after that at one of the bridges. I think it was Grave Bridge. I was standing, leaning on the front of the tank with my hat on the back, right on the back of the head, and a fag in the corner of my mouth, typical tanky, and who should come along the main road. We were waiting to go onto the main road, and I'm standing outside the tank, a big queue of traffic coming up, and for some reason we were waiting to come out, and he came by, and quickly, as I saw who it was, I put my hat on straight, but of course it was too late then, it had gone past. But he didn't take any notice of me.